Are you an entrepreneur looking for more free time, more money, or just looking for that success blueprint? The Proven Entrepreneur is the podcast for you. Host Don Williams and his guests share real success stories from proven entrepreneurs. Here's your host, Don Williams.
Hey, Don Williams here with today's episode of the Proven Entrepreneur Show. Man, do I have a great guest for you. So our guest today is CEO of Mutual Capital Alliance, which we know was founded by my good buddy, Rick Sapio. He's the chairman of a company called Lumini Network. He is a past president of CEO Coaching International. Check this out. 7.5 year past president of YPO, Young Presidents Organization, and was president of EO on the member leader side. And so, Sean McGinnis, welcome to the show.
Don, thank you for having me. Boy, you aged me there with that introduction, but that's fine. I think we season and age well as we go through life.
Well, we do season and age, and some of you do it well, like yourself. So,
thank you. It's great to be with you. I've been looking forward to this.
My pleasure. Now, you bring a unique skill set to the show because you have a very solid entrepreneurial history. And then you have a very solid executive history where you have served in organizations where maybe you had a stake, where you had equity, but you were not the primary. So excited to have you today. So I want to take you all the way back to young Sean. And so, like, think back to when you were 5 years old.
Wow. Okay,
and advance up to 18. And we're going to talk about that time range of your life.
Right.
Okay. So your accent tells me you were not born and raised in East Texas.
South Africa, south of Dallas, where I am now. Yes, born and raised in South Africa, Don.
Awesome. And I don't know if you know this, but my wife and I are headed to South Africa about the time this episode will air.
Oh, fantastic.
We'll be in Cape Town and running amok for 3 weeks.
Oh my gosh, I'm envious. Is this your first trip to?
First trip.
Good.
And hopefully they'll let us come back.
After the show, you know, if you need any recommendations or some insights, I'm sure you have it all planned, but I do this so often for friends and I go back every year. So I'm very current. So if you need anything, just give me a shot.
Yeah. So afterwards, I certainly want your input. So anyhow, we're all the way back to young Sean, 5 to 18, in the home that you were raised in. Was one of the adults in your home, mother, father, grandparents, whoever that might have been, was anybody an entrepreneur?
Both my parents were entrepreneurs, my mother and my father, and my mother's mother was an entrepreneur. My grandfather passed in his early 60s, and him and my grandmother had come through Africa during the Second World War, arrived in Durban. My grandmother was the head of she was a nurse, she was a matron, but she ran one of the convalescent hospitals for wounded soldiers in the Second World War. My grandfather had been in the military, had retired, and he died. My grandmother had 10 daughters, and she had to care for them. So she started 3 butcheries after her nursing career was over, the war was over. And literally, she, you know, put 10 girls through school, got them all out of the house and married well in those. She was an extraordinary force of nature, died when she was 97. And you can imagine, you know, she ended up with 32 grandchildren, and she was just a force of nature. My mother put my father through university, and he worked in the brokerage business, learned sales, he was an accountant. But then with a partner started an office furniture manufacturing business and went through all the trials and tribulations of an entrepreneur. And my mother had her own, she would renovate national monuments, Victorian houses, and she had a real estate sales business. So they were hardworking people all their lives.
And there was really no hope for you but to be an entrepreneur.
There was really no hope. And me and my siblings, I'm one of 3. Neither of us or none of us joined the either my mom or dad. I think my mother would have liked my brother and I to join her in her business. but we didn't. But all three kids have benefited from the work ethic and the example of our parents.
Yeah, awesome. And so interesting, when I first started the show, I thought, well, every guest will have this great entrepreneurial legacy. And that's not true. You know, it's about half and half. About half of the great entrepreneurs, the proven entrepreneurs, had no entrepreneurial example. They were just kind of wired that way. And so there's some of that. Okay, so we're still back with young Sean.
Yes.
Okay, tell us about your first job or first entrepreneurial venture, but the first time where you traded skills, time, effort in return for money.
Oh, such a great question. So 14 years old, I was a swimmer and a water polo player. Mm. The high school I went to did not have a swimming pool. We had to go to the public school up the road, which was filled with people. We had two lanes. We'd have to ride our bicycles up there, come back. And the school at the time, a government school, they said, well, you're allocated some money to build a school, but you've got to go out and raise some money. And you've got to raise X amount of dollars. I think it was maybe $100,000. Let's just use that number. It was somewhere in that range. And they said to a group of us kids, well, you need to help out. And I was so passionate about the cause. I was absolutely, I don't know why, but I just got the challenge. And personally, every evening, get on my bicycle, had a form which explained it. And I went door to door. And I started in my neighborhood, people that knew me. And I worked out neighborhood by neighborhood. I think I was going at one point, I was going 5 miles out, you know, which was quite a long way. But I raised, I think, individually $12,000, all in cash over a period of a year. My scariest experience was about 7 o'clock one night. It was dark. I go up this driveway, long winding driveway. I could hear some dogs. South Africa is very security conscious. The door opens and this Doberman Pinscher comes out and just bites my leg. Like literally, it bites me, you know, just below the knee, and didn't break my skin because I was wearing jeans. But I was just like, I must have looked like a deer in headlights. It was my best sale ever, Don. I think this lady gave me $200 just to keep me quiet.
I was curious.
I think I may have shed a tear, by the way, which is not bad. But, you know, that experience, even though the money wasn't coming to me, I discovered that I had a gift for telling a story, sharing a concept, and having somebody believe in me enough and trust me that they made the investment. Every single one of those individuals, by the way, because you got an invitation to the opening of the swimming pool, which was, you know, once we raised the money, took another year to build. I only got the benefit of using it for 1 year. My last year at high school. But the thrill, and to know, by the way, that that was part and parcel of our contribution, imagine the pride that you have in that. It was fantastic. So that was the first.
My natural being, I love people that are not scared to ask for money. I've lived on the sales side of all my businesses. And, and so many times entrepreneurs have an unbelievably good skill set, but it's not asking for the money. And truthfully, regardless of your business, you know, the marketing and sales piece is probably the most valuable piece of anything that you do.
And also patience. You know, the second story was my mother, who was in residential real estate. She had her own business. She would do open days, open houses every Sunday. Mm-hmm. And so she was a single parent. And my brother and I typically on a Sunday, my mother would not want to leave us at home because we'd get up to no good. My sister was really good, but she'd dress us up, put us in a jacket, coat and tie, and give us the information or, you know, the tear sheet on the house. And she trained us. And we would only speak if we were asked a question. We didn't know the answer. We'd say, my mother will have the answer. And legally, we had a kind of, was a little, but we did hundreds of open days with my mom showing people through homes. And we learned, you know, what people liked, what things were not great about the house, how to overcome objections. And we learned that just by watching her listening and doing. So we'd go to church, we'd go to an open day. And I would say that was probably 3 Sundays out of the month. And it was a phenomenal experience. We got to, I think, the biggest couple of big lessons, just being able to show up well, prepared, be a good listener, And we would take notes. My mom would say, okay, because she didn't have time to meet with them. She'd have a set of criteria, write down what you heard, and then she'd grade them. Is this a high prospect, a low prospect, a medium prospect? And she was really smart. And we learned a lot as a result of that. Also, we learned to interact with all types of people, people that were from all walks of life, people in different economic spheres. And my mother was a stickler for manners, so we always had please and thank you. We always opened a door and closed a door for an adult, and we were very well schooled in that area. I laugh because it, you know, brings back great memories.
Yeah, well, and you know, so many young people today don't have that truly opportunity to learn with persistence and repetition, and that doesn't help them. I can think of my first job. I was on the back of a John Deere tractor in a wheat field at wheat harvest, and driving a tractor for 12 hours a day. And so I learned right off the bat what hard work was. And I learned I didn't want to be a farmer. I'm going to have to do something else because I don't want to do this. And
well, and if you knew my mother or you spoke to anybody that knew her, my mother was cleanliness fanatic. We'd go into some of these homes. We'd get there a good hour and a half early because we learned some people hadn't made their beds. So we would be making their beds. And I can make a mean bed, Don. I went to boarding school from the age of 7. I went to the army. So I know how to iron. I know how to sew. I know how to make a bed. So my mom could rely on us, you know, and the kitchen was dirty or the refrigerator was. We were in there cleaning. We didn't say, we knew the relation to the success of a sale meant that, you know, my mother could pay the mortgage. She could pay our school fees. You know, living in a single parent household, you're very well acquainted with the bottom line of what it takes to. And my mother schooled us. You know, she wasn't holding anything back. We were part of the team, all three of us, all three kids.
Yeah. And truthfully, family ought to be the primary team.
Yes.
That just makes sense.
Yes. You know,
is that we are the team. Okay. So we're moving past your school days.
Yes.
And you went to university. You joined the Army first.
I went to the Army first. I did 2 years full time. We were drafted into the South African Defense Force. Did that for 2 years. I had a 10-year commitment, but you did 2 years full-time, and then you had to do a couple of months a year for as long as it took for you to accumulate 10 years worth of credit.
Okay. So like in the U.S., what we would call the reserves.
You went into the reserves after your first 2 years, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Very, very good. And then after that, went to university?
Correct.
Okay. And went to university in South Africa or?
In South Africa, a great little university called Rhodes University in a town called Grahamstown. So a university town. They had a speciality in law, phenomenal English faculty, one of the best pharmacy faculties in the country, a very good geography school, so a very initially funded by Cecil John Rhodes. So one of it would be in the top five universities in the country. And I initially thought I'd go into law, so I did a very broad Bachelor of Arts degree, double majored in industrial sociology and English, through psychology in there for a couple of years, and then thinking maybe I decided not to go down the law route, but maybe the psychology route would be good. And when I emigrated to Canada, I started a master's degree in counseling psychology because I thought that would be something that I could leverage at some point. In hindsight, maybe some business courses would have been great. I did take a year's worth of night classes and get diplomas in financial management and marketing, but not at the degree level. But I still got the basic tools. And then I got bitten by the entrepreneurial bug and I left the master's degree because I started to make some good money. And that's what sort of got me on the entrepreneurial venture of my own.
Yeah, great. And so what was your first entrepreneurial venture as an adult? What was your first company?
So it was called Thomas International, and it was actually similar to a franchise model. I acquired the distribution rights for Canada initially to a suite of psychometric and employment testing tools. A group of psychologists out of the UK had created these tests back in the day for the UK military, and they were using them to determine math and reasoning and working memory, behavior. they had a DISC tool as part of their foundation, like a Myers-Briggs type tool. So I had actually been a client of theirs in South Africa. My first job was working for a friend of mine's dad, who was a top entrepreneur. And part of the training that you did was learn how to recruit people. And as part of that training, you had to learn how to interpret and diagnose these test instruments so that you knew what you were reading and looking at. So I'd spent a year getting certified. And on my way to Canada, I popped in and met the owners of this firm, Ray and Doreen Reed, a fantastic couple, and their son, Martin Reed. And they obviously took a shine to me because when I got to Canada, they said, why don't you go and meet our distributor in Vancouver, who hadn't been doing very much with the license. And I gave them my report after a series of meetings. And they said, well, if you're open, we'll allow you to have the city of Toronto, but we want you to produce. And in my first year, I sold over $100,000 worth of tests. I set up my own shingle, set up my own LLC. The next year, I took over the Vancouver license. And then the rest is history. I built up that business over 14 years, ended up acquiring the U.S. rights as well as the Mexico City rights. It was the advent of computerization and the dot-com world. And I convinced the owners to allow me to invest my money in developing out a web-based solution for scoring and developing online reporting, which I ended up owning and then selling very successfully in 2003. And so I sold that business in 2003 after a 14-year run. It was a great experience.
Awesome. And the U.S. operation was based where?
I based it in Dallas, Texas.
Okay, very good.
So I moved here in 1999. Met my wife at EO. My wife was the first woman president of EO. That's how we met. We met in YEO back in the day when it was called YEO. Maria Centron, she's an amazing woman. My single greatest benefit of the O organizations is having met and married Maria.
Yeah. Well, the home team. It's still the primary team.
It's the primary team.
Still saying. You know,
amen.
here's my YEO story. And I don't recall the year, but I'm living in Wichita Falls, Texas. I have a company. We're doing very well. And one of my clients called and said, hey, Don, I think you should look into this group called YEO and join. And I was like, well, tell me a little bit about it. And he did. And I said, oh, you know, I'm not a joiner and I don't play well with others. And so I think I'll pass. Yes. And then, of course, 20 years later, I'm introduced to EO. And it takes about a year before I find out it was actually YEO back in the day.
Yes.
And so funny how life works. My first bite at the apple, I said, no, thanks. And I've gone on to have quite a bit of involvement with EO.
I know you have. And thank you for doing that because, you know, EO is built on volunteering. It's the same as YPO.
Yeah.
I mean, 17,000 members in EO today is all on the shoulders of folks like yourself. I played a small role, Maria did, and thousands of other people. But I look back and I go, wow, I learned so much, you know, about being an entrepreneur from my fellow YEO and then EO members and then YPO friends and members. I can't tell you, it's the gift that keeps on giving too.
Yeah, I totally agree. When I joined EO, I had been an entrepreneur 25 years. I probably had not asked anybody a question in 20 years. And I certainly didn't share anything with anybody. And just the peer experience for entrepreneurs, though I think it would probably relate to other people.
Oh, I think it does. I think it translates so well. In fact, if you look out there today and you see the number of peer groups that have sprung up, really, I think a lot of them stimulated by YPO initially because that's 75 years old, EO. Now you've got a plethora of community groups or peer-oriented groups where, you know, people learn from each other. You just think of the classic, by the way, the 12-step program, right? All of the fundamental characteristics of learning from adversity, learning from shared experiences, learning from observation and through trial and error. I mean, you get so much of that. And in groups like EO, it just makes it more real. And I find, you know, there's this whole series of debates and articles about imposter syndrome. I think I was a victim of imposter syndrome in the early part of my entrepreneurial journey because, you know, I was very fortunate. I worked hard for everything, but you start to develop success and you look back and you go, is that real? You know, can I get more? Can I get less? And, you know, you start to question. And it's being in a group of other EO members where you see the ups and downs, you know, and it's a true microcosm, isn't it, of life, Don? I mean, and you see the reality of life. Life is messy and it goes through its phases, but going through with other people, my friend Rand Stegen says, you know, go on the path together. And I love that quote because that's sort of characterized my life. I could not have imagined all the various things that I've experienced. And in every single experience, there have always been catalysts, supporters, people that have put me on their shoulders. I'm eternally grateful.
I'm glad we're spending a little time talking about the O's. Love that.
Yeah, the O's.
YEO, EO, YPO, WPO.
WPO.
Yeah. Maybe we can start a new O, you know.
Who yes, knows? Exactly.
Yeah, yep. Who knows? So tell me, so today in EO, yes. An EO member company has to have minimum top line revenue of $1 million.
Yes.
And so there's a certain percentage of members that own what I would call lifestyle businesses. Am not derogatory at all. I think in any country in the world, and certainly in the United States, having a lifestyle business for many people is a lot of contentment and freedom above and beyond a W-2 job.
Yes. Okay.
And then YPO, I think the floor there is 13 million currently.
Yes, it is.
And also a little different mix, entrepreneurs, yes, but also C-level executives and family businesses.
It's roughly a third. Slightly more family-owned businesses, yeah. Some multi-generational, entrepreneurial, they're about equal. And then the smallest group is Iyad Guns, but they're about 25% of the total membership are seasoned professional business executives.
Right. I think that's a great mix. And fortunately, the two organizations, YPO based in Las Colinas, I think.
Yes, it is.
Okay. EO in DC.
Yes.
But very collaborative and a lot of cross culture activity and learning and sharing. And for the average person in average member leader in EO, they will tell you, you know, EO changed my life. And
well, it changed my life. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
And YPO is a big part of that. You know, Don, you know, when I joined EO, we had just over 500 members. I was told in my recruiting, this was 1992.
500 members.
Yes, I was told that we had 2,000, and it was a giant fib.
Well, that was marketing.
That was my dear friend, Peter Thomas, who was the greatest salesman at the time that I'd ever met. He was the founder of Century 21 in Canada, and just an absolute amazing businessman and a great friend. And Peter was running the recruitment evening. I joined the Toronto chapter when we had zero members, so I was a founding member. And then, you know, I went to a meeting the day after our evening presentation, and Peter went around the room and nominated everybody for a board role and said, right, your goal is to get us to 50 members in a year so you get your charter status, and good luck, here's some tools and away you go. And I went home and I said, I've just paid $2,000 to build an organization. What's going on? But it was a fantastic experience. You know, as a result of that, I got involved in volunteering for leadership on the EO, YEO board back then. Actually, it wasn't the board. I was like sort of a subcommittee of the board. And they said, would you like to tackle getting Forum up and running? They had a basic Forum program, which was sort of cobbled together based on what YPO was doing. But they said, YPO has generously offered to have you come down and spend a week in Las Colinas with their head of Forum. And they're going to train you up and give you all the materials. We'd like you to then take it on, take it back up to Canada to your office and create the EO version of Forum. And so I came down. I spent a week with this delightful woman by the name of Maria Johnson. She was fantastic. She was running Forum at the time. And that's what I did. And then Mo Feifelbaum, who was our executive director, got very involved. And then he started his own Forum business in any way. But we just of the story was we were gifted by YPO a lot of best practices and then, you know, molded them customized them for the unique entrepreneurial community, which is EO, which is a slightly different community. Yeah. And we seeded, by the way, some amazing EO members became certified forum facilitators because they really became passionate about and really good at it. So people like Ellie Bird and Sue Hesse and Mo Fafelbaum, they were all YO members.
Yeah.
You know, and they became institutionally famous, both in EO and YPO, and have delivered incredible value. And then we went from kind of the basics to forum officer training to really then scaling that and then being able to take that around the world. So if you think of where it started in YPO, and then it morphed and it got, in some ways, I think, improved, and there was cross-sharing, so everybody sort of rose up together. But that now is the cornerstone and probably still the single greatest benefit for both of the O organizations, because the essence of forum, to what you said earlier, it's how do you authentically and vulnerably show up in a safe space with your peer group and be contributed to and contribute through experience. That was the unlocking maneuver that I think has created something extraordinary in the world.
I concur. And I did not know that history. And I'm thrilled to know that history. When I first, and just for our audience that maybe is not familiar, so forum is a really old term and probably back to the beginnings of humanity. And it was just a place where people shared ideas. And we see it a lot in history, in Roman history.
Yes, exactly.
That's what really started showing up a lot as a forum in the O organizations. I love that. I'm so stealing that, Sean.
With the greatest of pleasure, Don.
I'm so stealing that. But at least I told you. I'm an honest, yeah, exactly. I'm an honest thief.
Thank you.
Yeah. So in the O organizations, a forum is maybe 6 to 10 individuals who get together once a month for probably 4 hours or
4 or 5 hours. Yes.
4 or 5 hours. And then they take a trip. Sometimes it's, you know, to Las Colinas, and sometimes it's to Las Vegas, and sometimes it's to South Africa, but they take a trip somewhere and they spend 2 or 3 or 4 days together. And their commitment is to, well, they kind of decide their own commitment.
Right.
They decide their own goal as well. They should, but they share business, family, and personal experiences in an environment of no expressed judgment, so that it's a very safe place to share. And I've been fortunate that I've been in my chapter forum for nine years.
Beautiful.
I'm in 2 regional leadership academy forums.
Wow.
A global leadership academy
forum. Oh my gosh, you're really.
Well, those are quarterly.
Those are monthly.
Because they're people that are all over. And literally, I'll have a forum experience with every O member almost every time. I'm one of those people that Anna Birch told me one time. She said, you know, I didn't used to tell anybody anything, and now I tell everybody everything. And there's some real benefit to that. So,
you know what I love about it, Don? I can meet an EO member or a YPO anywhere in the world who's in a forum. And literally, instead of taking an hour and a half, and you don't get to know the person, or you're kind of second guessing, within 2 minutes, that just the nature of the conversation, because you're schooled in being authentic. So, and you could say something like, Don, I'd like to bring you into my confidence. And could we treat this in the same degree of confidence that we treat each other in forum? Boom. Any guard, any mask drops. You're automatically, you've given each other approval just to tell it like it is. I wish we could bring that to many more conversations, whether it's in community, you know, areas where, you know, we seem so at odds with each other today. If all we did was utilize the fundamental concepts of suspending judgment, listening without the judgment, hearing somebody, meeting them where they're at, and then holding that confidence so that you don't take that and tell it to 10 different people, that would change a lot of conversations, wouldn't it?
No doubt. And we'll change the world one person at a time.
Exactly.
We won't push a broad brush across humanity and change the world. It'll happen one person at a time.
And it'll happen meaningfully one person at a time, which I think is, for me, why I'm still in Forum. I've been in my Wipe Your Gold Forum for about 9 years now. That'll age me, Don. But, you know, it's such a, I have my Forum meeting this week. It's on Thursday. I can't wait. Every month, I just cannot wait to spend time with 9 other individuals who are so totally different from me, with totally different lived experiences, but who have my back and I have theirs. And it's been, I mean, I've been in a Forum since 1992. So, you know, I'm overly committed, not overly committed, but I'm sold, I guess you'd say, just because of the value that it's contributed to me, my family, my business, myself. I mean, I can't tell you what a luxury it is, particularly at certain times where I've been down, I've had a failure, you know, I've had a death in the family, or I've got something going on that's really challenging. And I can take it to my Forum, not to dump it on them, but to just let it be and get some feedback. It happens every time. There is somebody, and sometimes multiple people in the group, that have been through a very similar experience and can just provide you perspective. And sometimes all you really need, and your family gives this to you, but sometimes it's good to get kind of that virtual hug from a group of people that are intimate with both your personal, your professional, and your business life. It's kind of like free therapy in some instances, right?
I mean, in a way.
I just say it like that, but sometimes you need that.
Yeah. So earlier you brought up imposter syndrome, which it's just human.
It's human.
It's not negative. I think everybody has some of it sometime. And maybe for the entrepreneur, maybe at noon, I think I'm going to dominate the globe and I'm going to sell a bazillion of them and I will be king of the world.
Yes.
But then at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, we lose a big client or a key employee or whatever.
Whatever, yes.
And you ride that roller coaster. And at the lows, that doubt is all it is.
It's done.
You know, it gets bigger and you're farther away from it at the highs. And so you don't see it, but we could rename it, you know, human syndrome, because it's as common. If you're breathing, yes, you have it. And
we all have it. It's how we deal with it.
It's how we deal with it.
And the awareness of it. And then once you've been through that cycle a few times, it actually helps you manage it, I think, in a much more proactive, much calmer way. Certainly, that's been the case for me.
I totally agree. I think once you name it, you can claim it. And yes, you're like, I'm feeling a little of that right now. And I know that's not the truth. And so it's a little reframing and life gets better. Okay, so absolutely unbelievable career. I'm going to take you back and I'm going to ask you a hard question.
Yes.
I want you to think back across your career to a hard lesson. So yes, many times people look at entrepreneurs and they think it's all rainbows and unicorns and sunshine and tulips, but many times it's not. So can you think back across your career to a moment where you're like, ah, that hurt? But then maybe today, after we have the beauty of the perspective of time, where we get some distance on it, we can look back and say, man, that did really hurt. Okay. But today, maybe that was the best thing that could have happened for me at that time.
Very much so. So 2008, 2009 for both myself and my wife, Maria, was a very difficult period. I had spent the previous 5 years with a fabulous guy who lives in Fort Worth, named Don Osborg, amazing businessman. He came up through the Citigroup of companies. He was a banker, was chief financial officer, ended up being the CEO of Diners Club. Don and myself and some business partners had created a financial revolver structure, a loan structure to stimulate the development and construction of low-income housing in Mexico. And we had a financial partner, a great financial partner, who I'd worked with previously in my previous business, a large global banking business. And we were chugging along, doing very, very well. And the financial collapse, 08, 09, our lender went out of business in 2 weeks of the crash. Simultaneously, my wife and her EO partner were building second homes in Punta Mita in Mexico, and their lender, all of their capital, also within 2 weeks. So you had both of us literally out of business. And I would never have predicted that, not even in a million years, and not for both of us, and not at the scale. And by the way, we were, you know, we were fortunate in that we had some runway and we worked out of it and we didn't have legal cases, neither did Maria, but we ended up having to pivot completely and find different sources of income. And so when you're a two-income entrepreneurial family and you have this already established, you know, level of success, and you really have to start again in many ways, it was a very confronting, very embarrassing set of circumstances, completely out of our control. And so the lesson learned there was always have a plan B when it comes to capitalizing one's business. And for your listeners that are entrepreneurs in business, having rainy day funds is very, very important. You know, if you're the sole proprietor and you're funding it yourself, and if your business has the ability to throw off cash, make sure that you have as much software as possible to at least cover you for 6 months, if not a year, in a vehicle that's liquid and that you can get your hands on quickly. Because when you go from chugging along with a regular line and you go over the cliff and you suddenly end up within 2 weeks down to zero, and you've still got to make payroll, you've still got vendors that you have to pay, you know, you've got to execute on the contracts that you have in place. If you have no capital, if you have no reserves, then the implications and what happens is very serious. So that was a pivotal lesson. And it also gave us both a little perspective in terms of if one of us was overly leveraged on risk, the other had to be leveraged the other way on security, just in terms of our own personal, the way that we were working. And so there are a lot of entrepreneurs that have had multiple failures. And from, particularly if you learn, or from circumstances that really challenge you, if you learn, those lessons are invaluable. So that lesson, though, came at a point where I'd already sold a company and built a very nice business, and I had no expectation of that happening. But there's always a silver lining. If you really are who you say you are and you believe in yourself, and I had a track record, I knew that I could bounce back. So I took a small group of people, started a little consultancy. Within 3 months, I was back cash flow positive and built another nice little business. But boy, was that tough. Here's the other thing. We had structured our lives so that we weren't living beyond our means. We had a beautiful home, but we didn't have a mortgage payment that was taking 2/3 of our monthly income. We didn't have massive car payments. We weren't buying expensive things. We were living comfortably well within our means, which enabled us not to get panicked and not to do silly things.
Yeah.
And so that was a profound lesson. And there have been many lessons along the way where I would say, if I had to do it over again with this experience, I would have done things a little differently.
As would we all. If I knew then what I know now, I would have made some changes. But I love that. And I think there's a real kernel, a real golden nugget in there. So I remember when my boys were becoming of age to drive, I said, so when cars tut, that's called an accident. And cars are not supposed to touch. Airplanes are not supposed to touch.
No.
Businesses are not supposed to run out of money.
Yes.
And so job one is keep some money. And we saw that in spades.
Yep.
A couple of years ago, March of 2020, when the US shut down, companies that had no cash,
yep,
had a hard time surviving. Companies that had a safety net, they were able to make some progress. Okay.
And one more thing, Don, which I learned, the people that you hire. I was blown away at the loyalty, at the commitment, how people took reductions in pay, how everybody got together. And I think that's a factor of the culture you set. It's who we are as leaders. If we're authentic leaders and we're in it with the employees, it makes a massive difference. I've seen other circumstances where less than appropriate CEOs, people just bail because they weren't investing in. So there's a lot of other things that we could unpack there. Cash. And make sure that you communicate transparently with your people during crisis, because if you don't, you're not going to get that commitment that I certainly have received and that I've seen others receive.
You know, when you look at your team and the people that are wearing jerseys, some people are really on the team And some people are really just wearing the jersey. They'll be the first to go.
Great analogy.
And it takes a little reflection of yourself as a leader. If your ratio is out of balance, the real teammates and the pretenders probably starts not there, but at another level. So, okay, so I'm going to ask you the tough question. This is the one that stumps most people, but I gave you forewarning, okay? And so, Sean, I'm going to put you in a time machine,
yes,
and I'm going to transport you all the way back, and you're going to get about 60 to 90 seconds to talk with 20-year-old Sean, okay? And if you only had 60 to 90 seconds to talk with 20-year-old Sean, I want to know, what would you share with Sean that would help speed him along his entrepreneurial journey? And so into the time machine you go, yep, all the way back. Here's Sean. What you got?
So I first say to Sean, don't ignore the hard details of life. Make sure that you educate yourself on paying your taxes when you start a business, setting up your finances and your planning so that they are clean, pristine, you know where everything is. Take the extra time and make sure that partnerships and people, that you've done your homework and your due diligence, because without people, you can get nowhere. And some people are out there and they will take advantage of you. And, you know, thirdly, align yourself with experts early that have been there and done that circuit that can help you shortcut some of the mistakes that you're going to make. You don't need to make some of those mistakes. If you swallow your pride and you go and ask the appropriate people who've got the credibility, the standing to help you, that will save you in the long run. And I would say that, and then I'd go, but take risks, have fun, and just don't put yourself in a box, because there's so much life to live.
Love that. Okay, so the Proven Entrepreneur Clan, how can we help you? Is there anything we can do for you?
Don, I just think, thank you for that. I think spreading the message, I think entrepreneurship, by the way, is the future of the planet. I think anybody that can create something, that can sell something of value, that can provide their ingenuity to the world, I think we should be supporting them. I think that starts at the community level. I think it starts at early childhood education. So for those of your listeners that have young kids, teach them the fundamentals of not only how to fish, but somebody said something else to me interesting, how to sell the fish once you've caught the fish. Yeah. I thought that was brilliant, because I'd always, you know, had this big sort of favorite thing. If I teach somebody to fish, they can, you know, feed themselves for a lifetime, but you still need to sell that fish. So if you can start early, you know, meet people where they're at, I think that's brilliant. For my own personal desire is, let's be human with each other. Let's accept each other, be kind, and give each other a hand up, a leg up, because in my experience, giving has enabled me to receive way more than I put in.
Yeah, no doubt. So great counsel. And on the fish analogy, I might even add, but keeping in mind, I'm a sales guy, is learn how to pre-sell that fish. So exactly. Go sell it before you catch it.
Don't catch too many fish. Pre-sell it.
Pre-sell those fish. Do it on a subscription recurring revenue model.
Yes, very important.
And life will be good.
And life will be fantastic. Don, yes. What a pleasure spending time with you.
My pleasure, Sean. Thank you so much. I'm grateful.
What can I do for you, sir?
Boy, you know, I'm always stumped asking, and people rarely do. So I don't know, but I reserve the right to provide an answer at a future date.
If
that's okay, sir.
You absolutely have it. Whatever you need.
Okay. Awesome. Folks, that's today's episode of the Proven Entrepreneur Show. See you next time. Bye now.
That's today's episode of the Proven Entrepreneur. Go to provenentrepreneurshow.com, subscribe to the show, leave an iTunes review, and you could win a $25,000 VIP day in Dallas with Don himself. And get Don's easier and faster selling with video course free. Please join Don on the next episode of The Proven Entrepreneur.